You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 164 by Rudolf Steiner, entitled The Value of Thinking. It is 11 lectures translated by Christian von Arnim. This is Lecture 8, given in Dornach on the 3rd of October, 1915. We now continue with the interpretations which we have related to the Rangel pamphlet titled Science and Theosophy. We stopped at the chapter titled Essence of the Teachings of Jesus, according to which the essence of the teachings of Jesus should consist in the good news that the creator and controller of the universe is a loving father to the human being whom he created in his image, that love for God and our fellow human beings is the highest moral commandment, that the soul of the human being is eternal, and that after death a lot will be prepared for it which corresponds to the moral conduct of the human being during their life. We had to point out that the teachings of Jesus can be described in this way, but that the essence of Christianity in the spiritual scientific sense is not understood if we do not realize how the appearance of Christ in Jesus of Nazareth and the mystery of Golgotha are facts which must be understood by those who want to gradually find their way into the essence of Christianity. These facts belong to the essence of Christianity. Christianity, as I have often said, is not merely a doctrine, but encompasses a reality. And understanding this reality, which can be expressed as the mystery of Golgotha, is part of understanding the essence of Christianity. It is then pointed out that the various religions have created a conflict between faith and science. Quote, the conspicuous aberrations into which the organized Christian communities, the historical churches, have fallen have brought their dogmas into opposition with some firmly established scientific achievements, and have thus brought about the conflict between faith and knowledge, religion and science, which is corroding the spiritual life of the European cultural world. This situation explains the interest that has turned to other religious systems that claim not only to be in harmony with science, but also to extend it. Among these teachings, theosophy deserves special attention. Since the European cultural world was made aware by H. P. Blavatsky of this teaching, which originated in India, it has found various representations. Close quote. From the spiritual scientific point of view, it must be pointed out in particular that what spiritual science is of necessity to modern humanity must not be called a teaching originating in India, but that it has developed purely out of itself, out of the impulses of the present cycle of development. And if outsiders repeatedly point to a relationship between our spiritual science and Indian teachings, it is only because the concept of repeated earth lives has remained so alien to the West that everyone who hears of repeated earth lives immediately thinks of India, because there this teaching has become dogma within the religious ideas. The only important thing is to emphasize again and again that what is our spiritual scientific content is built up from the needs of the present itself, and is not a doctrine originating from here or there, but should be grasped and understood on its own terms. Finally, it must also be said with regard to Blavatsky that she was at first quite independent of any East-facing cultural current with her teachings, as she expressed them, for example, in title Isis Unveiled, that what was written by her in the initial periods belongs entirely to European spiritual culture. Only it then happened, through various machinations, that Blavatsky became more and more attracted to things Indian. In this way, she imposed a kind of Indian signature on the current that originated with her and swore by her, which must in turn be removed again, because it would be impossible to accomplish even the slightest thing in more modern culture in the right way with any old system of religion. This is extremely important, It also remains important for the consideration of a particularly interesting chapter of our pamphlet, in which the Theosophical Teachings are compiled. The chapter is called, quote, Essence of Theosophical Teachings, close quote. Mr. von Rangel does not describe here what spiritual science is directly as such, but what he has found in the literature of the various worldviews that call themselves theosophical. I will read this chapter, and then we will link our reflections to it. So, quote, Essence of Theosophical Teachings. Steiner again. The most central assumptions common to the various presentations and views of theosophy can be expressed as follows. Quote, number one, apart from the world perceivable through our five senses, there are other spiritual worlds, of which each higher world acts on the lower ones. Number two, there are people who have other means of perception besides the ordinary five senses, so-called occult senses. Number three, thoughts, feelings, impulses of will, in short, what we call spiritual phenomena in human experience, are, even if they have not expressed themselves in the sensory world as words or deeds, living entities capable of effects in the spiritual worlds and indirectly in the sensory world. Number four, the soul life of every human being leaves imperishable traces in the higher worlds, which in its entirety is called the Akasha Chronicle by occult researchers, and can be investigated by some people, initiates, who are qualified to do so. Number five, the living human being is not a simple being consisting of the animate body, but the physical body is only the instrument by means of which the actual being of the human being, their indestructible I, capital, can enter into a relationship with the physical world. These relationships are mediated by intermediate constitutional elements. Firstly, the etheric body, which is the bearer of the unconscious vegetative life and shapes the material substances of the body according to its own laws. Secondly, astral body, carrier of desires, passions, urges. Number six, the I, capital, of the human being, bearer of their self-consciousness, is endowed with freedom. That is, they can direct their desires, impulses of will, thoughts, etc., set them a goal and direction. Number seven, depending on whether the I makes use of the external opportunities offered to it in life, in accordance with the eternal laws and the purpose of the world as a whole, or neglects to do so, it shapes its karma, that is, the degree of contentment or pain to which it is entitled in the world as a whole. Number eight, after bodily death, the immortal I, the human being, passes through various spiritual worlds, carrying with it the sum of the eternal values it has gained in earthly life. After a period of time that differs for each individual being, the I begins its return journey from the higher worlds to the lower ones, enriched by the insights gained in those worlds, and begins through reincarnation, a new life on earth, which is shaped according to its karma and according to the aspirations of its changed I. Number nine, world events are regulated in accordance with the purpose of the whole of spiritual beings which intervene in events, promoting or inhibiting according to their nature or direction of will. Number 10. These entities are hierarchically structured in accordance with their sphere of action and power, and, like everything in the world, are subject to development from the lower to the higher. Number 11. The supreme law of all world affairs is, quote, free sacrifice out of love, close quote. The deity encompassing the universe, following this law, sacrificed itself through manifestation in the external world by endowing the spiritual entities originating from it with the ability of free impulses of will. The cosmos brought into being by this act is left to develop. Number 12. This development leads through eons from the unconscious to the conscious comprehension of the supreme cosmic law, and through its realization to the reunification of the individual with the whole. Close quote, Steiner again. Let us now go through the individual points. Under number one, it says, quote, apart from the world perceivable through our five senses, there are other spiritual worlds, of which each higher world acts on the lower ones, close quote. We can agree with that. Under number two, it says, There are so-called occult senses. I already said yesterday that it is necessary to emphasize that spiritual science takes the view that through special treatment of the ordinary faculties, spiritual faculties of perception can also be developed in the human being, and that in the present cycle of development it is these systematically developed faculties that are most important. We can also find such abilities in humans which still originate from earlier times. They can be awakened because they are present in almost every human being, but they must be developed as described in title, Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, How Is It Achieved? It is therefore not good to say that in the way Mr. Van Vangel says, but we should say, it is possible that the human being, just as they develop their five senses through prenatal development and develop them further in the existence outside the mother, they also develop inner powers in the purely spiritual sphere, develop abilities to see purely spiritual worlds. Such abilities are the conscious transformations of older abilities, which were appropriate for earlier epochs on earth, and which awaken in every human being of their own accord, either through external cause or during systematic training by the methods described in title Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, How Is It Achieved? The expression occult senses should be avoided, for we cannot say that the human being acquires occult senses, but it is quite a different way of perception. We should not call senses that which organizes itself from what is called the lotus flowers, but at most sensory abilities. Under 3 it says, quote, thoughts, feelings, impulses of will, in short, what we call spiritual phenomena in human experience, are, even if they have not express themselves in the sensory world as words or deeds, living entities capable of effects in the spiritual worlds and indirectly in the sensory world. Close quote. Well, this has often been described very precisely, especially recently, where I have described the transition of the perception of thoughts into the experience of living thoughts. And it would be even better to say, those things which appear in the human being as thoughts, feelings, and impulses of will are, as they appear to the human being in the soul, the image of beings of the higher worlds, the elemental world, and the still higher worlds, so that we actually have true reality in what we first have as thoughts, feelings, and impulses of will, in the same way as we have true reality in the sensory perceptions. It lies behind the one as much as the other. Point 4 says, quote, the soul life of every human being leaves imperishable traces in the higher worlds, which in its entirety is called the Akasha Chronicle by occult researchers, and can be investigated by some people, initiates, who are qualified to do so, close quote. This has often been described, and it is of very special importance that we take this into account. When we enter the Akasha world, we immediately enter a living world and not a world of dead images. Then under 5, attention is drawn to the human being consisting of different constitutional elements of their being. You know how to state that much more precisely than it is stated here. As it stands with the 6th point concerning freedom, we have often spoken of the human being on their path being led toward freedom, that the human being becomes ever freer and freer. Point 7, about karma, you know that very well too. Point 8 says, quote, after bodily death, the immortal eye of the human being passes through various spiritual worlds, carrying with it the sum of the eternal values it has gained in earthly life. After a period of time that differs for each individual being, the eye begins its return journey from the higher worlds to the lower ones, enriched by the insights gained in those worlds, and begins, through reincarnation, a new life on earth, which is shaped according to its karma and according to the aspirations of its changed I. Close quote. You can learn exactly, to a certain degree, what may be said about this from the lecture cycle titled The Inner Nature of Man and Our Life Between Death and Rebirth. Point 9, quote, world events are regulated in accordance with the purpose of the whole by spiritual beings which intervene in events, promoting or inhibiting according to their nature or direction of will. Close quote. You know this too. Point 10 says, quote, These entities are hierarchically structured in accordance with their sphere of action and power, and like everything in the world, are subject to development from the lower to the higher. Close quote. It is not good if everything is generalized again in this way. The idea of development also has a limited validity. I have often said that it is necessary to form new thoughts when we ascend to the higher worlds. Thus we can say that in ascending to the higher worlds, we first penetrate regions where time still plays a role, but then we enter regions that can be described as regions of permanence. In these, time no longer plays a role. There is no other way to say this than to point out that the law of development only applies as a symbolic one, as I have done in my title, Occult Science. Point 11 says, quote, "The supreme law of all world affairs is free sacrifice out of love. The deity encompasses the universe. Following this law, sacrificed itself through manifestation in the external world by endowing the spiritual entities originating from it with the ability of free impulses of will. The cosmos brought into being by this act is left to develop." Close quote. Point 12, quote, "This development leads through eons from the unconscious to the conscious comprehension of the supreme cosmic law, and through its realization to the reunification of the individual with the whole." Close quote. All this can be seen in greater detail in the context of spiritual scientific research, and you can probably see that this compilation is made for outsiders. I hope that each of you could make a similar compilation, which could probably be even more accurate than is the case here, since it would then paraphrase actual spiritual science. Now, Mr. von Wrangel tries to recapitulate and characterize the points made once more by saying, quote, "All the occult researchers in European culture agree on these basic teachings. H.P. Blavatsky, Mrs. A. Besant, Ledbetter, Dr. Hartmann, Dr. R. Steiner, and others. The same teachings are said also to apply in the Indian occult schools from which H.P. Blavatsky took them." Close quote. Steiner again. But here we now know that spiritual science, as it gradually represents itself in its pure form to the world, must not be mixed with other things, for it can really only fulfill its mission if it takes into account the essentials of the Western cultural world, and therefore also of Western scholarship. But there can be no question of this in the case of personalities like the late Dr. Franz Hartmann, nor can there be any question that the form which theosophy has taken under the leadership of Mrs. Besant, or even under Ledbetter, has anything to do with the Western cultural world, as it naturally makes its cultural demands. And here I would like to refer those who, as seekers, are beginning to develop a certain interest in our spiritual science, and who attach great importance to our spiritual science, detaching itself from that which otherwise often prevails in the world as theosophy, to a very nice and kind article written by Dr. Rittelmeier in the journal titled Christentum und Gegenwart. Truly, I mention this article not because Dr. Rittelmeier also says some things about me in it. Those who know me better know that I do not mention the matter for these reasons, but because our cause, and especially our building, are spoken of with a certain affection and understanding, and are characterized with affectionate consideration in one direction or another. It seems important to me to highlight one passage from this article that I received this morning. Quote, "Apart from working together on the building, what holds the different nations and people together and brings them together is Steiner's lectures. I was kindly allowed to attend several of these lectures. They were mainly about Christ and represented an extraordinary effort to grasp the world historical fact of Christ from various angles as the deepest and innermost cultural event. The time will probably come when this inner struggle for Christ will be made accessible to a wider circle. For just as in Steiner the old theosophical movement is working its way out of the dogmatic and mediumistic into the scientific, so in him it is also making the significant transition from the Indian into the Christian." Close quote. So, it is important for those who want to develop an interest from out of Western culture in what spiritual science aims to be, that we do not wish to rehash ancient Indian teachings, but that we want to create something out of the spiritual world that is suitable precisely for our cycle of time. Perhaps I may refer you further to the article after all. I can probably do that with reservation, because after the many things that are said about our movement and about my writings, something can also be said for once that does not berate us but responds with some understanding. The article is in number 10 of the journal titled Christentum und Gegenwart from October 1915, which is published in Nuremberg, Ebnergasse 10, Buchhandlung des Vereins für Innere Mission. As I said, when you read this article, do not misunderstand this pointer. But after I said that it would be good to get to know the ideas that the spiritual life outside associates with us, you might also be interested if something appears occasionally that does the opposite of what usually happens with our movement. The article is called titled Two Buildings of a German Future, Dornach and Elmau. Elmau was founded by Dr. Müller. It is with great understanding that this article in particular points out what distinguishes the Dornach building from the building in Elmau. Perhaps I may read out this passage. I shouldn't read out another passage because there is too much talk about me, but perhaps I may read out the following. Quote, even if you see Dr. Müller only a little, and only at times when he is weary, you always get the impression how much he is personally serious about the life he talks about, and how much unceasing inner effort for this life is present in his soul. The Meinbergers themselves, well, of course, there are all kinds of people among them, and not all of them likable, as is also the case among the anthroposophists, but time and again you meet people who make you glad that there are such people, men and women, for whose inner life and striving you gain every respect. It would be highly interesting to compare the kind of inner work people do on themselves in Dornach and in Meinberg Elmau. What a telling difference, even outwardly, between the folk costume-like women's garments in Elmau and the stole-like, serious, but in part very tasteful women's garments you see in Dornach. Or when you become aware that both in Dornach and in Meinberg Elmau, emphasis is placed on free, natural bodily movement, that in Elmau this is expressed in the cultivation of the old German dance, while in Dornach there is a serious search for eurythmy, that is, for a form of bodily representation of the spiritual, initially, for example, in the recitation of poetry, in which the actual inner experiences of the body in human speech are also expressed outwardly. Many Christians who still have the old disregard for the body in their blood will understand the one as little as the other. Close quote. Basically, what Rittelmeyer is saying here is that they want to rehash the old in Elmau, and we want to create something new here. We can be quite satisfied with that. It is very pleasing to see that there are, after all, some people who have an understanding of the spiritual scientific movement. While it is smeared before the world in such an unpleasant way by those who do not want to learn about it. Now, Mr. von Wrangel goes on to say, quote, the occult faculties, like the sensory faculties in the earthly life of the human being, are said to be of very different degrees. The highest level of initiation attainable at the present time enables the human being, in an awake state and in full possession of their spiritual faculties, to go with the I, capital, at will, into higher spiritual worlds, up to that world where the Akasha Chronicle provides information about the past of the world as a whole and each individual human being. Close quote. So, on the whole, we can very much agree with the presentation. It is only necessary to know what our spiritual scientific movement wants in particular and to focus sharply on this. For it is indeed necessary that it should not be confused with others who are also concerned with the spiritual worlds, but who lump everything together in one big mishmash and talk of deepening into the divine and so on. It is important to keep this firmly in mind. This is followed by the chapter, quote, Secret Doctrines. The results of the knowledge gained by the occult researcher were previously only communicated in occult schools, but are now partly revealed in writings and lectures accessible to everyone. These communications, naturally in form and content, bear the stamp of the occult researcher's personality. Since they are stated to be based on occult observations, the truth can only be independently verified by people who possess the same degree of occult gifts and the same power of judgment. For judgments must first be derived from the observations made in the spiritual world, and these conclusions must be translated into the language of the earthly sensory world in order to be able to communicate them to fellow human beings. Close quote. On the other hand, it should be pointed out that although the content of the spiritual worlds can only be explored if those abilities are present of which we have spoken, basically really anyone can examine what has been explored. For the world that everyone can observe is in a certain sense a reflection of the spiritual world into which we can look through the faculty of spiritual observation. And if a person just looks at the world around them with really open eyes and asks themselves, is that which is explored in the world of spiritual reality by the occult researcher in accordance with what is happening in life, then they can, even without developing occult abilities, judge everything. It is not that you cannot form a judgment when people say you have to trust the occult researcher, but that you do not want to engage in any verification. What is said by spiritual science proves itself in life and in the world, and everyone can verify it. Those who say they cannot verify these things are basically saying, I don't want to engage with whether you can verify the teachings of spiritual science in life and in the world. I don't want to engage with this wakeful perception. I want to sleep with my reason and my power of judgment. And because people are so fond of sleeping with their reason and their power of judgment, that is why they say, you cannot verify it. But again and again, I want to impress upon the world, so to speak, that it is important that spiritual science is not accepted on authority, but can be verified by what happens in the sensory world. It is only because science still observes in a sensory way that it does not engage in a spiritually awake consideration of life. That is why the correctness of what the spiritual researcher says is not accepted. And that is why I try not to lean on any authority, not to lay claim to any faith, but I endeavor again and again to show by this or that in outer science, in philosophical strivings, how people stand before the spiritual world and only do not want to admit to themselves that they ought to go further. You need not rely on authority, but only have open eyes. Then the striving in spiritual science proves to be a real and necessary one in our time. On the other hand, you must be aware that some of what is called spiritual science is capable of blocking people's minds to the real spiritual world. This is the case with worldviews that otherwise mean well, for example, Eucens. But they blind people by speaking of spirit in words, 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 which, however, mean nothing other than what is given by the physical reflection of the soul. There is no need to be unjust about it. You can see it in my book titled The Riddles of Philosophy, undertaken in such a way that it cannot be called unjust what is to be said about such people as Eucken. But you also have to know that the view toward a correct spiritual science is obstructed by an incorrect one. It is infinitely more comfortable to speak of the spiritual in Eucken's way than to engage with the real spirit, which can be investigated. The next chapter, quote, difference between sensory science and spiritual science. In this, they differ essentially from the truths that can be obtained by means of the ordinary senses, since here the verification of the facts can be undertaken by innumerable people, and the logical concatenation of them is subject to the judgment of each. In the case of occult findings, the most important criterion for the credibility of the communication from an occult researcher is the moral value of their personality. Close quote. That is not the important thing, but the important thing is that they stand on the ground of true spiritual striving, that they endeavor to lead people into the spiritual world in the right way. If we see the paths that lead into ordinary science and can thereby conceive of the possibility of how it might be carried forward, then we get documents that do not incur the caveat that we simply believe the spiritual researcher is a decent human being. Quote, if there are reasons to doubt their truthfulness, their occult communications are naturally of little value. Close quote. That would be just the same as if, when someone has achieved something in ordinary science, we made our personal approval of their research dependent on their personality. Quote, if there is no confidence in their power of judgment in ordinary life, it is highly improbable that they would stand the test under the infinitely difficult circumstances, for example, of investigating the Akasha Chronicle. Close quote. It is possible, after all, to investigate whether what has been discovered from the Akasha Chronicle corresponds to life. Quote, but even with unusual occult gifts, with the highest development of the intellect, with complete lack of bias of the investigator, it is not likely that human beings, who are never infallible in earthly matters, should be so in transcendental ones. Close quote. We should not speak of infallibility at all, but of course only of the fact that it is a matter of the spiritual scientist representing things from a certain point of view. But that basically has nothing to do with the way we relate to the communications of the occult researcher. Quote, we are therefore compelled to approach the communications of the occult researcher with considerably harsher criticism than is called for in the case of any witness of earthly observations. Close quote. So, no approach with rejection or criticism. Most of what is done is rejection without criticism. If it were rejection with criticism, there wouldn't be half as much rejection. Quote, a more or less reliable sense of their likelihood must guide the inner agreement of the various communications, but above all the trust in the person of the occult researcher. Close quote. So we must not get the wrong idea about such trust. In contrast, what comes next is particularly important. Quote, if their communications from those worlds, which are inaccessible to most human beings, contradict what has been unmistakably proven by means of sensory perception, no unbiased person will waver as to which communication is to be preferred. If, for example, I really know all the facts which support the idea that the earth revolves freely, floating in space, and an occult researcher tells me that they have ascertained from occult perceptions that the earth does not revolve, but that the fixed stars move around the earth, a person with sound senses will not pay any attention to such occult research. Close quote. So, occult science must agree with external science, and if it does not agree, it must state why and try to harmonize with science. Quote, of course, such a contradiction can only refer to facts of the sensory world, that is, not to transcendental questions that lie beyond all sensory experience. Close quote. Nevertheless, the transcendental questions can also be considered. Quote, thus, to take another example, an astronomer who considers the Kant-Laplace hypothesis of the origin of the solar system probable cannot, as in the former case, tell the occult researcher, who informs them of a quite different cosmogony, that his assertion is erroneous. For every sane person will regard the rotation of the earth as proven, whereas the origin of the solar system from a nebula, according to the Kant-Laplace hypothesis, may well be regarded as probable, but not as proven. Close quote. Mr. von Wrangel says this quite correctly. I have always pointed out that the inadequacy of the Kant-Laplace hypothesis, that the world formed out of a primordial nebula, which is already shown to children in school with the well-known experiment, you pour a drop of oil onto water, pierce it with a needle to which a section of card is attached, turn, move this needle, and then see how the individual drops split off. You then immediately have the process of the emergence of a system of worlds, if you ignore yourself in the process. But when you do this experiment, it should be so that you point out that the teacher is there, turning the needle, because otherwise you also forget the teacher, the Great One, who turns the system of worlds. Quote, so it is my deepest conviction that in a dispute between really proven facts of the sensory world and results of occult research, victory will always remain on the side of science. Close quote. There will be no victory, but when the facts of sensory science are reliably investigated and, on the other hand, the facts of spiritual science are reliably investigated, they will agree. Quote, when some occultists express the view that there is nothing fixed in earthly science, this is only possible for those who are acquainted with sciences only at second hand, but not with the foundations in question. However, the leading theosophists of Europe at the present time, Mrs. A. Besant, Dr. R. Steiner, and others, claim that there is no contradiction between their occult researches and the reliable results of earthly science, and Dr. Steiner in particular is well qualified to judge this through his extensive and thorough knowledge of the exact sciences in their methods. Whether the occult researcher is mistaken in this may be left open, and in my opinion is not of great importance, for if such a contradiction were proved, it seems to me that the question whether the basic teachings of theosophy correspond to the truth or not would not be touched by it. All these teachings refer to areas that lie beyond sensory experience, so they can neither be confirmed nor refuted by science based exclusively on sensory perceptions. Close quote. This is important because it shows that the person who professes to be a scientist comes from his scientific conviction to the view that a spiritual worldview is necessary, and that a person is necessarily led to it if they are a scientific person in our time. The next chapter is headed, quote, Theosophy, a Religion. These theosophical teachings claim to give people information about the purpose and goal of the world as a whole, and of individual human life, and thus to be a religious worldview. Close quote. My dear friends, it is necessary that we are clear that spiritual science proper, our spiritual scientific movement, really has nothing directly to do with religion, that it does not want to be a religious movement. Let us be clear that in relation to the religious life, spiritual science can also give nothing other than an inner relationship between the human soul and Christ. That is the religious moment, that is the religious element, but that is Christianity. Hegel and essentially spiritual science acknowledge that Christianity is the fulfillment of humanity's religious aspirations, that the foundation of new religions will neither take place nor can take place. We should get to know the spiritual facts, and spiritual science is a new instrument for this. But it does not want to establish a new religion. It does not want to set itself up as a new movement alongside Christianity, but only provides the research, just as Copernicus provided his discovery. But what was it like at that time? In the 15th century, Copernicus came along and gave what he had to give. But it was not until 1822 that the Catholic Church allowed people to believe in the Copernican teaching. And Luther said, "The new astrologer, Copernicus, wants to prove that the earth moves and not the heavens, the sun and the moon." Now think how long it took for Copernicus to be accepted. Now, if people come and say that it is a fantasy to teach repeated earth lives, that is understandable. But it is not up to us to teach people an opinion as if it were a question of founding a new religion. Christianity is the synthesis, the confluence of the world religions. Through spiritual science, we want to learn to understand Christian truths better than they can be understood without spiritual science. But we do not want to leave it in people's minds that in theosophy they are dealing with a new religion, with a new religious worldview. Spiritual science must defend itself against this. It wants to be a science, and thereby also deepen religious life. But religious life is also deepened by Copernicanism. Thus the Catholic theologian Müllner, of whom I spoke on the occasion of the recitation of Della Grazzi's poems, said of Galileo in the 1890s, "The person who is really a Christian and understands the religious relationship of the human soul to the divine worlds can only experience a deepening of the religious life by investigating the world more closely, and not a danger." It must be emphasized time and again that it is a weakness to oppose what is brought by spiritual science in terms of deepening the religious. Imagine if Columbus had been told, "Just make sure not to discover America, because there could be other people, other gods there. Imagine what a weakness that would be if we did not stand so firmly on the ground of Christianity as to be able to say, whatever will be discovered, the ground of Christianity is so strong that it will withstand it. Therefore, it is nothing but proof of the lameness of those who say we must reject spiritual science. You have to say to them, this is not Christianity if you believe that your teachings can be overturned by spiritual science. Copernicus did not overturn things either. On the contrary, religious life was deepened by him. It is weak, lame-heartedness, which, from an external, official, so-called Christian point of view, wishes to impose a fight on what spiritual science intends. This is the position we must adopt against those who come to us with their dull, lame-hearted objections to theosophy. In brackets, the chapter Theosophy of Religion is read to the end. Quote, it seems doubtful whether any solution of the riddle of the universe can fully satisfy the critically educated person of the present day with regard to its rational justification. It will always be a question of the extent to which the spirit and mind of the human being are satisfied by the solution to the great eternal questions presented to them. Since a rational argument for or against is not possible here, the feeling must decide on the greater or lesser probability of one or the other solution. We will compare some of the world views as they present themselves to the educated person of European culture from this perspective. Close quote. In the following chapters, Wrangel then compares materialism, agnosticism, and occultism with each other, and then has a chapter on reincarnation and karma. He then arrives at Lessing's view of reincarnation and a recapitulation of the whole strand of thought. There is not enough time to discuss the final chapters. We will therefore continue tomorrow at 7 o'clock, because we still have some important things to say about the final chapters. The end of Lecture 8.